You are listening to Love Sport Breakfast with me, Richard Lee, and Patrick Christie's. Here are some of your latest headlines. This morning, 20 wickets fell on day one at Lords as England were skittled out for just 85 against Ireland, playing just their third ever test match against them. England batted for just 128 minutes in their abysmal first innings, but did manage to dismiss their opponents for 207 in the evening session. England trailed by 122 runs heading into day two. Great Britain's Adam Peaty won a seventh World Championship gold medal as he retained his 50-metre breaststroke title in South Korea. Peaty also helped Britain win bronze in the mixed 4x100 medley relay last night. According to multiple reports, Dillian White allegedly failed a drugs test in the build-up to his fight versus Oscar Rivas last weekend. But Matchroom Group Managing Director Eddie Hearn has tweeted stating both fighters were subject to extensive VADA and UKAD testing for their bout. Hearn continued, both fighters were cleared to fight by both bodies and the British Boxing Border Control. Lee Griffiths scored on his first Celtic start since September as the striker returned from an induced break due to his mental health. Celtic ran out 5-0 winners against Estonian side Nom Kanju in the Champions League second qualifying round first leg tie. The first English club to be in competitive action will be Wolves if they take on Northern Irish side Crusaders tonight. And Everton could prove a surprising front runner to sign Wilfried Zaha. Everton will hold talks over a deal this week, despite the Ivory Coast international still preferring a move to Arsenal. Palace won't sell to any club unless their $80 million valuation is met. They've thrown in a couple of names again, didn't they?
Yeah, I liked that one from the Estonian First Division.
Yeah, I think I was nowhere near getting that correct, but who's going
to
know?
Well, actually, to be honest with you, nobody knows.
No, which is the beauty of this.
Yeah, they might not say anything. Exist.
No, they might not.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Might not. There's a few interesting things today. Actually, there's a few other things alongside I want to talk about. One of the strangest pre-season friendlies ever took place yesterday, which I want to talk to you about in a bit. First and foremost, I want to talk about Lee Griffiths. This interests me, the fact that he made his comeback. First Celtic start since December. He's been off because of mental health issues.
Yeah.
Which is quite unusual to see someone take that amount of time off for mental health issues. But is this a good example of where football's changing slightly, where, look, it's not just injuries. I want to talk about Nathaniel Clyne as well. He's got himself a bad injury and could be out for as many as 9 months. But something like this, where actually, look, if you have got issues going on, it may take a period of 6-7 months, as this has.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Kirkland as well has actually just come out and said that he's checked himself in to get some help. And, that, you know, I think that's very important. He says, look, he's not ashamed of it. And, you know, look, you need to go and get yourself sorted if you have, you know, issues like that. And it's good to see him back, though. And, I mean, it'll mean the world to him. He said that, this is Lee Griffiths, he said that basically he cried yesterday after that ball hit the back of the net. And, you know, fair play to him. It's a nice kind of... a nice turnaround for him, isn't it? But I mean, Rich, Ireland.
Yeah, I was going to say, as much as I want to talk football, I was trying to avoid the cricket.
That's why I thought it was bizarre, actually, that you decided to open up then with Lee Griffiths. It's almost like you were trying to hide. Trying to
hide
something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because, well, we don't really want to talk about it, do we? Do we talk about it? I mean, I guess we probably should.
I mean, England were an absolute shambles yesterday at Lords.
Yeah.
You know, we all thought that this wouldn't even be a contest. We were talking about the fact that the game might only last 2 days, but we thought it was because we'd absolutely batter the Irish. But no, they have battered us. They dismissed England for 85 runs at Lords. Now England are 122 runs behind after managing to bowl out the Irish, and the England openers just had one over to face at the end of yesterday.
And it was friend of the show, Tim Murtagh.
Yes, so Tim Murtagh.
Well, he was friend of the show.
He was friend of the show. Now he's enemy of the show. Yes, Tim Murtagh, Middlesex man. He's just taken his 800th senior first class wicket. And some people wait a lifetime to get on the honours board at Lords. Some people try and try and try and they never make it. Tim Murtagh rocks up, 5 wickets for 13 runs off 9 overs. Thank you very much. Start engraving my name, please. I'll see you around.
There you go. I think you can find it's called a fifer.
A fifer.
Yeah, there's absolutely some interesting things they do when you get a fifer as well to celebrate.
Raise the ball aloft.
Yeah.
Raise the ball aloft. Show the crowd the seam and just shout things like, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
I am better than you will ever be. Some interesting stats, Rich, about yesterday.
Go on.
So, this was England's 25th lowest score in tests, their 9th lowest in England and their 4th lowest at Lords. It was the 7th time a third innings of a test has happened on the first day. So, that's in entire test history.
Right.
So that just shows you how shocking that was, really. Murtagh's wickets at Lords since 2000, 383. It's home ground, of course. No team has made 85 or less in the first innings and gone on to win the game. And England's bottom four only managed to score a combined total of 41 runs. Not really a great effort.
No, indeed. I mean, look, that being said, actually, things could change because you've got the feeling going into their second innings cannot be as bad as their first innings. For a start, we should be done within the 4 days, which, that, you know, you always wonder whether that might be an issue. Should well be done within the 4 days. But there's no reason why England can't go on and score a 400-plus.
Well, you'd think so. But the fact is, though, that it's a funny one, this, because I think this England team, they're very well prepared for bowlers running in, bowling at 90 miles an hour on a flat wicket, and, you know, the bounce of the ball's pretty true, and that's what they can tolerate, that's what they can do. They're almost better against playing against world-class players. But what happens here with the likes of Tim Murtagh, who basically just bowls kind of 80, 85 miles an hour, it's all about nibbling it off the pitch, all about moving the ball through the air. And England really, really struggled. And just look at the way that Jason Roy got out, for example, fending outside the off stump, caught at slip. That was always going to be the big issue for him ahead of the Ashes, and he didn't do anything to allay anyone's fears.
No, for a start, I think Tim is more like 75, really. You know, I was chatting to Timmy about this, right. And yeah, he's more like 75. But no, we can give him a little bit. We can say it's 85.
Yeah, I mean, with a tailwind.
True, yeah. Tailwind. Yeah. And obviously after he's been to the gym and maybe a bit more pumped up, closer to 85.
But, I mean, England showed an astonishing lack of nous yesterday. That wicket at Lord's started off very, very green and was only ever going to dry out throughout the day. And all he had to do really was dig in, you know, ride that particular spell and wait a couple of hours. The only issue is we didn't really wait a couple of hours. Well, we were all out in 144 balls.
Is this a transition, though? Because they've gone from obviously playing World Cup 50-over cricket, as they have, to then going to this. And like you said, it's a very different type of cricket. We were talking a lot about Jason Roy yesterday, whether he can make the transition, whether he might have to change his style of game, and we never really got a chance to see because he was out so quickly. So is it a period of that? Or could it be more the case of them just a bit burnt out? They had a manic few weeks, World Cup, obviously very, very successful, and it's the come down after that.
Well, potentially. I mean, a lot of people are taking to Twitter to suggest that maybe the team is still hungover from their Cricket World Cup celebrations. And, you know,
potentially. Well, it was a wild day at the Oval the next day.
Oh, big time, mate. The way those school kids just arrived.
Yeah.
You know, stood there, Ben Stokes wearing the shades, desperately trying to cover the whiskey off his breath. There's no... There's nothing to suggest that Ben Stokes had downed a litre of scotch before he went and met some school kids at the Oval.
No, that's clear to point that one out, and I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
So going into today, it does make it interesting, right? Because, look, had we been sat here now in England, 400 for five going into day two, it would have been great. We'd have been talking about the great Bairstow, the great Roy, but it would have been a bit boring in some ways. I'm kind of glad, and this is a great day for Ireland.
Oh, it's a fantastic day for Ireland. You know, I mean, the party will never stop there.
But it doesn't stop, full stop, about anything.
No.
They just party the fact that it's Thursday.
Absolutely. Is it Thursday? Oh!
You know what that means?
That's right, pub. Anyway, look, in a way, I think it's good to get it out of our system, right? Yeah. Because, you know, look, you're always going to have a bad day at the office, and you might as well do it in a match that doesn't really mean anything. It's still gettable, this, by the way. Look, at the end of the day, Ireland, realistically, if we manage to kind of claw it back and probably set them a lead of around 250, there's every chance that England will manage to win that game. But yeah, certainly a wake-up call for England. And the Australians ahead of the Ashes, well, they're not going to be worried, are they?
Oh, the Aussies yesterday, they must have been enjoying that.
Well, yeah, I know, but then we just hold the World Cup up, don't we? And we go, that's ours. Mm. We invented this game and now we've brought it home.
Mm. Simple. Good comeback, effective, straight to the point.
Yeah, exactly. This is Love Sport. Riverdance Day,
yes,
Rich.
That's right. And you're very good, by the way. Watching you there, I'm incredibly impressed.
Been practicing.
I could tell.
Yeah.
Really? Do you know what? For someone who's...
How do I say it?
How do I... What I was going to say is you're very light on your feet.
For
someone who might not be light on their feet, who's not particularly sporty. There's no way I can say it, because once you've said that initial sentence, you're going to insult someone. Mm. But you are incredibly light on your feet.
Right, thanks, mate.
You're welcome.
Boris Johnson.
Yeah, let's move on quick.
He was absolutely
this show could go downhill very
big
quickly.
Time. Yeah, I will sabotage your career. Boris Johnson obviously took to Downing Street yesterday, and it was the biggest round of cabinet sackings ever. It was, as the Sun is saying, Night of the Blonde Knives, which is to be honest, a bit of a stretch. Boris Johnson got rid of 17 ministers in 5 hours, doing his best Lord Chugger impression. You're fired. You're fired. And he's given top job to Sajid Javid. He's now our Chancellor of the Exchequer. Now, Sajid Javid was actually in a position as a £3 million a year job for Deutsche Bank. So you would have to have a look at it and go, he probably knows what he's doing, fingers crossed anyway. And certainly couldn't be worse than the human rainy day that was Philip Hammond. Michael Gove has been given an interesting position. It's called the Duchy of Lancaster, which basically means that it's a floating cabinet job. He will be overseeing essentially the inner workings of government. And Jeremy Hunt, of course, the person that Boris Johnson was going up against for leader of the Conservative Party, has been sacked. He tried to play hardball with Boris. He said, look, I don't want to be Defence Minister. I want to remain as Foreign Secretary. And Boris went, oh, okay, bye then, and sacked him. So there we are. Yeah, it's quite an interesting round of appointments, really. It's now got the cabinet, I should say, has now got quite a lot of women in there. It's also got a lot of ethnic minorities, etc. So it's quite a nice cabinet that's representative of the country, I would say. Some key appointments, just to run you through them. As I've said, Sajid Javid is the Home Secretary. Priti Patel is Foreign Secretary. She's an avid Brexiteer as well, so clearly there's a statement of intent there. Dominic Raab is back in as well. Sorry, Priti Patel, Home Secretary. Dominic Raab, Foreign Secretary, I should say. Brexit Secretary Stephen Barclay and Defence Secretary Ben Wallace, who actually is a national hero, despite the fact that you may or may not have ever heard of him. Served with distinction and was mentioned in dispatches as well, actually, for bravery relating to a rather secretive terror cell, which we're obviously not allowed to know anything about. Health Secretary Matt Hancock keeps his job there. He's been a staunch supporter of Boris Johnson. And Gavin Williamson, the man who was our Defence Secretary, he lost his job after allegedly leaking some sensitive information to the press. He's actually been rewarded for his loyalty to Boris Johnson, and he is now Education Secretary as well. They're kind of the main ones, really.
Well, he certainly got to work then.
Well, yeah, he's cracked on. Mm. Also, so his partner, Carrie Symons, 31 years old, the person that he, you know, allegedly had an absolutely blazing row with, the neighbours filmed and recorded and sent to The Guardian, like all good neighbours do. Mm. Neighbourhood watch, taking it to new extremes, isn't it? She was outside Downing Street yesterday with Bojo, and she was wearing a pink floral dress that has now sold out completely. She's now an influencer. Mm. But he will not actually be living in number 10 with her. They will be living in the larger flat, which is actually in number 11. And Sajid Javid, the Chancellor would traditionally normally live in number 11, actually will be living in the flat in number 10.
Why is that?
Well, the flat in number 11 is bigger.
Right.
That's it.
Okay.
That's literally it.
So isn't it, I thought, okay, this is me being a little bit naive maybe, I thought it was just a case of you live in number 10, that's a given.
Well, if you're Prime Minister, mate, you can do whatever you want.
Right, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. True. Boris Johnson did manage to break royal protocol 10 minutes into his premiership, which I thought was fantastic, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sign of things to come. For a man who's desperate to try and convince us that he's not some kind of bumbling idiot that can't really be trusted with this nation's, existence, that's probably not the best way to go about it. You're not allowed to reveal what the Queen has said to you, what discussions have taken place between the Prime Minister and the Queen, because the Queen, of course, has to invite Boris Johnson, technically, to form a government, etc., etc. So Boris Johnson basically came out and was, like, apparently strolling through Downing Street, like, and the Queen just said, you know, why would anyone want this job? And apparently, like, a load of his top aides like, shut up. Shut up. Stop talking about the Queen. So, yeah, that's that.
Okay, right. So he's come in. I suppose it's hard to talk about first impressions when we're only talking, 24, 48 hours. But he has come in. He's made his intent known. I think one thing we're guaranteed to get with Boris is action, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose energy. That was the buzzword of his maiden speech as Prime Minister. It was about energy, it was about optimism. And so, you know, yes, I suppose you do get action. It does, crucially, though, this does show that he's already planned what he was going to do, which I know sounds stupid, because that's probably the minimum that you expect from a bloke who's been desperate to become Prime Minister for basically all of their adult life. But it is good, because that was the worry, that, you know, you just end up looking at total chaos.
Love Sports. This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
is Love Sport.
And we fly off to another planet. Which planet today are we on?
Mercury.
Mercury, yeah. Are you sure it's Mercury?
Absolutely, 100%.
There's several other planets you could have chosen.
Pluto. Is that planet, actually? Anyway, look, let's get
There's no other planets that we might have flown to?
Absolutely not.
Fantastic. No. Okay, so behind closed doors today, what are we talking about?
Goalkeeping, Rich.
We are talking about goalkeeping, which is great news for me. There was an error last night. If you haven't seen it, Simon Mignolet made an error against Sporting Lisbon for Liverpool. We were talking about Mignolet earlier in the week because Andy Lonergan, who was Preston goalkeeper for a long, long time, interesting story because he's without a club this summer, has joined up with Liverpool to help them and vice versa, help him get fit. And it just so happened they threw him into a game and he did very well. I had a bit of back and forth with him and he was telling me just how good Mignolet is and you don't really appreciate it until you actually work with him in person. Lo and behold, 2 days later, he makes a pretty bad error against Sporting Lisbon for a goal. And we were talking off air, Kira and myself, about certain goalkeepers that seem prone to mistakes. Now, I mentioned briefly that I saw a very interesting person yesterday, Cambridge University, who studies goalkeeping and he studies the data of goalkeeping. And some of the things he shared with me, and he's been through hours and hours worth of footage. In fact, he watched every single game of the World Cup last year from start to finish and logged every action from every goalkeeper.
But he's good at passes.
By the way, I was fascinated. I was fascinated with this conversation. Yeah, you would have probably wanted to do horrible things to yourself during this conversation. But it was, for me, it was fascinating because the thing is, with goalkeeping and with actually with everything, we make such generalizations. Whereas actually, okay, you get a goalkeeper that is incredibly solid, does everything right, but makes three high-profile errors in three high-profile games each year, they're going to be seen on negative. Hugo Lloris is a great example. Statistically, last season, Hugo Lloris was top three in the Premier League. Yet, a lot of people, the general consensus is he had a poor season. And the reason being is that he made errors in the wrong games. He made errors against Barcelona in big, high-profile games. I think Simon Mignolet's got a little bit of that going on, where now you could look at it two ways. One way you could look at it is that when it comes to the big occasion, he crumbles. Or you could look at it that it's just coincidence, that you're going to make mistakes every now and then. And if you're lucky, you make it against West Ham when you win 5-1. Not that you beat West Ham 5-1, but you know what I mean. You make it in that game as opposed to making it when you lose to Barcelona at Wembley, live on TV, in front of however many million people on TV. And I think there's part of this. I also think then you find what you're looking for. So with someone like a Simon Mignolet, you're almost looking for that mistake. With Karius, you're almost looking for the mistake. Whereas when it's an Alisson, it kind of goes unnoticed. By the way, Alisson made three or four high-profile mistakes last season, but they went on and won every game. Leicester being a great example, when they went on and won that game, so it's forgotten very quickly. De Gea, he was given a lot of grace until towards the end of the season where it felt like it was one after another, and you suddenly get to a point when you can't just skip past them anymore. At some point, you're like, okay, you know, you can keep calling it uncharacteristic. I mean, that was the classic line with Petr Cech. It was always an uncharacteristic Petr Cech error until they become a little bit more, and then you start taking out the word uncharacteristic. And that happened with David De Gea towards the end of last season.
It is odd, isn't it, actually, how the difference between just perception and reality.
Yeah.
So, you know, Alisson looks the part, doesn't he? He's a big lad. He's got that beard. He looks cool. Like, he just looks like really chilled, you know, like everything's in control. Well, he lets one through his legs or drops across and, you know, the ball gets bundled into the back of the net or something like that. You walk away and you go, yeah, he'll probably be fine again next week. Yeah. Well, he looks at Lloris Karius and he looked at him and went, oh, he's shaky. He's shaky. And it just seems to be actually as simple as the way that some people look.
No, you're right. It's a really, really good point because body language says so much. Because, of course, you look at someone, they look under control. Peter Schmeichel was a classic.
Yeah.
Like, he made a lot of errors. Technically, you know, dive on his stomach. That was one of the key things. You know, and it was almost made out as if it was a good it wasn't good technique, a lot of the things that he did. But he was very effective in what he did and nothing fazed him. You know, he made some massively high-profile errors, yet nothing fazed him. You could even argue in the Champions League final in 99, yeah, that was a Peter Schmeichel mistake. Yet, nobody ever talks about it, apart from me right now,
yeah,
because it was Peter Schmeichel, and I think he had that air of authority, which I think that's one of the key things for goalkeepers. If you can get that nailed, that gives you a certain amount of grace, and people will feel confident just looking at you because your body language is so strong. Simon Mignolet doesn't quite have that, I would argue, and I don't know why, and I don't know what he needs to do, but he doesn't quite have that air of authority. So as good as Andy Lonergan's telling me he is, and telling me that he is extraordinary when you train with him, we don't see that. The narrative about Simon Mignolet doesn't necessarily fit the fact.
But it is quite funny how many people are very good in training, and they're not so good on the big stage, you know. And did you ever really play with anyone, or you know, or come across anyone in your career where you see them in training and you're like, goodness me, you're absolutely Loads. Incredible. And then they get into a game and they're just nowhere near as good.
Loads, they hide. And a lot of that will be the psychology behind it. That's where the mental side of it is huge, because look, it's one thing going when there's no pressure, no one's watching. And then there's another one. You step over that white line and you've got the people in the stadium and you know that the footage is going to all corners of the globe. There is a completely different pressure. And most people will tell you that. They'll love training. And this is where the best coaches in the world are able to replicate training as to what it is like going into a game. And I think I spoke about a guy called Dave Allred before, who I had the pleasure to get to know. And he worked with Johnny Wilkinson when he put it through the post against Australia. He's worked with Luke Donald. He's worked with Molinari in recent years. Now, they've all done brilliantly under his leadership. But his biggest thing is very, very simple. He effectively makes training like a match day. So with golf, for instance, with Luke Donald, a lot of the same things he would apply that he applied with Johnny Wilkinson, where every single shot mattered. Every single shot you hit in training was measured. The data was kept over and over so that each day you're having to improve on the previous day. You've got objective markers rather than going through the motions, which you can do, whether it's football or anything you do in life. It's very easy just to go through the motions. And before you know it, a month's passed, 2 months, 6 months, and you don't really know how far you've progressed or if you've even progressed because you haven't actually set specific markers. So I think certainly when it comes to training, that can be improved. The other thing I want to touch on is the data analysis for goalkeepers. This is the reason I met the guy yesterday, because I don't think we have a strong way of judging a goalkeeper. We see the stuff that comes up on Sky Sports News where save percentage, which, by the way, is the worst way of judging a goalkeeper, because let's look at it. If you're playing for a team that aren't particularly good and they're cutting through you like knife through butter, then your save percentage is going to be lower because the shots you're facing are one-on-ones. They're shots from 5 yards. Whereas if you're playing for the best team in the country and you're forcing the opposition to shoot from 30 yards all the time, well, then of course you're going to save more because the chances are that they're not going to score from 30 yards. So the stats that we're provided with are generally very, very poor. Now, they're starting to get a little bit better, and I won't go too geeky here, but the expected goals that you might see on Match of the Day from time to time, they've flipped that for goalkeepers and made an expected saves barometer now, which is pretty good. And there's a few other things that are being done, but this lad I met yesterday, and to give him a little bit of a shout out, some brilliant stuff that he's doing, where again he will effectively judge every single action a goalkeeper does, and there'll be a certain metric in place, and each action will be judged and they'll be given a score. The interesting one I'll point out, and he did a study on one-on-ones last season in the Premier League, and interestingly, David De Gea used to always do very well on one-on-ones. That was the biggest part where he let himself down last year, where he performed this, what you'd call the long barrier, which he does over and over again, but he did it too often and at the wrong times, and his save percentage of one-on-ones was around 20%, whereas the average is around 50%. Then you had the likes of Alisson and Ederson were up at 70-80%, just as one example where obviously something's not quite right. Now, whether that's a lack of bravery, whether that's a slight change in his game, whether he just wasn't quite on the boil anymore, but again, this is where stats can be very interesting and can give you some results that can then lead you down interesting paths. And I don't think we've got enough of that in goalkeeping in general.
Yeah, England's golden generation, that was something that used to really frustrate me, when you've got the undoubted talent of those players on the pitch. There are some absolutely world-class individual players who, you know, just play in the Premier League every single week, scoring loads of goals, just being incredible, and they all put together in the same team and were absolutely pants. I just can't even look. It looked like they'd never met each other before, that they weren't from the same country, they didn't speak the same language, in fact they weren't even from the same planet. So there's something gone wrong there, isn't there? And is that a part of that mentality you were talking about, going from, you know, everything's absolutely mega in training, you've got Wayne Rooney pinging the ball into the box from however many yards out, but then you get into a match and they just couldn't do it?
Psychological, again. Do you know the example I've given?
Actually, is it possible, by the way, for it to be psychological when it comes to Wayne Rooney?
Definitely possible for it to be psychological.
Do you think you just need to get, there's just a hamster in a wheel? Just, right, Wayne, well, we're 6 weeks into this CBD course now, and I can confirm that the hamster has died. Sorry about that.
I won't comment on that. No, look, it'll be purely that. Do you know the example I'll give? England taking on New Zealand in the cricket final. And all of a sudden, England were overwhelming favourites, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. Look, New Zealand, of course, were very good, but England were overwhelming favourites. We didn't see the best of England that day. Yes, they got the job done, just, but it could have been very, very different. Now, there's a certain level of expectation which flips the psychology, because all of a sudden now, it's not a case of, in some ways, I think it worked out well for England in the cricket when it flipped, and they had four games. They had to win all four games, and suddenly the pressure was on, and the expectation wasn't there. If anything, it had flipped, where we were even talking here, saying, look, they're probably going to crash out. What a disaster this will be, catastrophe this will be. And obviously, in the end, they did end up winning those four games and pulled it out. But in some ways, it's quite nice to be the underdog. It's quite nice to know that the expectation isn't there. So I look at that golden generation. I think it was exactly that. Well, they knew they were going in and thinking, everyone's saying this is our best chance. What then happens when Gareth Southgate's team step out in 2018 and our expectation level could not be lower? Mm. All of a sudden, they express themselves. And it's a case of, look, just go and enjoy it. No one cares. No one expects anything.
Yeah.
Until we get to the semi-final, then there's expectation again. And then what happens?
Well, that's it, isn't it, mate? I mean, I have the same thing with our show every day.
Mm.
So I'll be in the Uber on the way in. And if I ever get to a point when I think, gosh, today might be all right, you know, inevitably it's a car crash.
Yeah.
We find ourselves in court.
Yeah.
With stuff, you know, all of just again. Mm. The judge, oh, nice to see you again, Patrick. Sorry, Your Honour. You know, but actually, if I sit in the Uber now, and I'm on my way in and, you know, I'm asleep. I come in, do no preparation whatsoever. I even think things about sabotaging my own show. Normally, it goes really well.
There you go.
There's something in that.
You've summed it up perfectly.
Exactly.
Yeah, you've what were your thought processes in the Uber today?
Gosh, I really hope they don't notice that I'm still absolutely battered. I'm not. I am not.
That was Behind Closed Doors. This is Love
Sport. We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station. Love Sport.
I've seen a lot of people, by the way, on Facebook and Twitter going, oh, I'm going to ring up my boss and tell him that it's too hot to work today. There's laws against this. Unfortunately for you, I've just checked this now, and there is no law in the UK for minimum or maximum working temperatures. So we can all stop this nonsense now. Get to work.
Get yourselves to work. There you go. The word of Patrick Christie. Patrick Christie's Britain. What a Britain that would be.
Yeah, mighty.
Patrick. Indeed. How are you going to be spending the day in this weather out of interest?
Well, I am probably just going to walk up and down the Thames a little bit. Might go for a dip.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that'd be nice.
And that's about, to be honest with you, mate, that's about it. I'm just so focused on the show, you know?
Absolutely. Exactly. Get ready for tomorrow's show. That's what you do.
Never ends.
Assess today's, get ready for tomorrow. We're going to be talking a bit of cricket very, very shortly. Of course, England, not particularly impressive yesterday. Slight understatement. All out for 85. In fact, the last wicket stand was our second best stand of the day.
Yeah, exactly. 144 balls is all it took Ireland to skittle England at Lord's. We're going to be speaking to former England opening batsman Nick Compton very shortly. In fact, he's on the line now.
He is indeed, because we suffered the indignity of being bowled out for 85 by Ireland before fighting back on a day when 20 wickets fell at Lord's on the ground where they won the World Cup only 10 days ago. And with just over a week before the Ashes begin, the long-standing deficiencies in England's batting were once again exposed. Joining us now is former England opener Nick Compton. Morning, Nick.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Yeah, good. Hope you're well too. What did you make of that yesterday?
Well, it wasn't pretty watching, was it? But I suppose as an Ireland fan, it was a great day's cricket. I mean, look, let's go back to the toss. The wicket really isn't a good one. I think yesterday I saw some pictures of it. It was green, it was patchy, it was a bit damp under the surface, and I know that Trevor Bayliss certainly wasn't happy with it. And it's kind of, I suppose it's not the sort of preparation you want for your batters going into an Ashes series. But if you're Ireland, I mean, it really fell into their hands. I mean, I think the conditions have really brought them into this game. A guy like Tim Murtagh, who I've played with for, he's probably, you know, 12, 13 years, played with and against him. So I know how well he bowls, and he's definitely got me out a few ways that he did get the England players out. So he's a tricky customer. 800 first class wickets. You know, this isn't someone who, yes, he may only bowl sort of late, you know, early 70s in terms of speed, but he's very accurate and particularly at Lord's.
Yeah, and just to have a chat with me about Tim, really, because on the face of it, you think, right, there's no way that he should be skittling a test-level side, certainly of England's ability. There's no way you'd have thought he'd take 5 for 13 at Lord's off just 9 overs, get himself on the honours board. But he's clearly better than what might immediately meet the eye. What is so good about him?
Well, he's just relentless. I mean, you know, he does bowl slowly, which I suppose means that he can therefore be more accurate. But if you look at his action, I mean, it's very repeatable. It's very easy on the eye and on the body as well, which has enabled him to play for as many years as he has. I mean, he runs up and hits a very good area. And of course, as you know, he does enough with the ball. I mean, you know, he has the ability to nip the ball back up the slope at Lords. He can obviously hold it away from you. He can swing it. It's not big margins, but it just does enough. And, you know, as you know in cricket, enough is enough. So it certainly did for the England players yesterday. And I think, you know, if you look at that batting lineup, it, you know, it's a strange time to have a game considering, you know, England's success in the World Cup. You know, you think of guys like Joe Root and Bairstow. I mean, these guys need a break, you know. I mean, mentally they need to freshen up. Mentally they need to put a line through, you know, the emotion of what happened, you know, sort of a week ago now. And, you know, these are sort of things that need to be dealt with properly. And then come back to Test cricket, to Red Bull cricket with, you know, as much of a renewed kind of energy for this Ashes. Otherwise, one just lends into the other and you don't really have time to sort of deal with it. There'll be a lot of residual emotions still in there from the World Cup. There'll be a lot of tiredness. I mean, you know, they might be excited about the Ashes. They might feel okay physically, but you can't underestimate the impact that the 4 years culminating on England's success at the World Cup has on an athlete and on a person. And that's why just reading some of the articles in the newspaper, Mike Atherton and even George DeBell talking about, you know, the importance of rest, and we don't want situations where players are mentally fatigued.
Yeah. You tweeted, give the ball to Curran yesterday. Did England bowl poorly too, do you think?
I did that before they bowled. So reason being is that the pitch conditions were obviously very conducive to sort of just pitching it up and swinging it. And if you look at England's bowling attack, is probably the one that would do that as a left arm and he'd get it full. I was just concerned that the others may not get their length right, if that makes sense. So I don't think they bowled poorly at all. But it was probably just a comment based on the fact that attributes to maybe a Tim Murtagh and some of the Irish bowlers.
Yeah, definitely. Well, look, Nick, I mean, you obviously were at the top of England's order for a while. I mean, this clearly is an area and has been an area for some time now that we've not quite got right. And yesterday was just another example of it. What needs to happen there? Is it a lack of application? Is it a lack of ability, perhaps?
No, it's not a lack of ability. I mean, these guys could all play. They're all very good players. I think it's very easy for me or anyone else to sit on a couch and sort of watch that and then sort of fire sort of, you know, these kind of criticisms of these players. And they're all very good players. It was obviously tricky conditions. It wasn't ideal for the type of players that England have. However, it is something that has been a bit of a worry over the years. I mean, if you look at some of the dismissals yesterday, they weren't great. I mean, you know, if I got out that way, I'd probably say the same about myself. You know, I mean, some of the attributes that are really important in Test cricket, which the big thing is that a lot of these players aren't working on their Test game enough. Why? Because everything's lending itself towards One Day cricket, of course the World Cup has just been played, but also the fact that there's these two T20 competitions all around the world. So that's where the money is. That's where the focus is for, you know, modern day cricketers. Test cricket, yes, is still a focus for some, but if you're a young player at a county, are you going into the nets and spending 4 or 5 hours grueling your forward defence and practicing leaving a ball outside the off stump? I'm not so sure you are. So those are some of the attributes and the qualities that you need, I think, to play Test cricket, and particularly playing wickets like that. You need to have the old qualities of playing the ball extremely late, under your eyes, play straight, know where your off stump is. And if you had to get a checklist, I'm not sure you'd be checking many of them yesterday. But look, they haven't played some of it for a while. Give them a chance, a time to work it out. These are top professionals and players that can work it out. I guess, you know, the big question of Jason Roy, you know, making his debut, I think that's something that is probably worth talking about. You know, how's he going to do? Is he worth the opportunity at the top of the order? And I guess you'd say that yes, he is, because there aren't many other candidates who have put their hands up. And you see a guy that clearly likes international cricket, you know, likes strutting out there, likes playing in front of big crowds. So that's a major plus for me. The problem is, of course, he hasn't really opened the batting at all in four-day cricket, and it's a very different game. You know, people are listening. The red ball does a huge amount more than the white ball. You know, it's just how it works. It swings, it seams, it does that for longer. So the jury is really out. I mean, I think everyone wants them to succeed. Everyone wants them to adapt. But I think that's going to be a fairly lengthy process. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he may struggle technically at the top of the order. I mean, I think in an ideal world, you'd have him coming in at 5 or 6 and learning his trade in Test cricket.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, the Aussies will be watching closely, and they are actually playing the Aussies at the moment. They've decided to play against each other. But look, just lastly, Nick, how do you think we're going to do with the Ashes? Is it going to be a bit? Has it been a bit of a wake up call for us yesterday, getting skittled for 85 against Ireland?
Yeah, I wouldn't look too much into that. I mean, look, it's you're not going to take what happened against Ireland into the Ashes. However, there are some concerns, and I think the top three is a concern. It has been for some time now. If you look at Roy, Burns, Denley, I mean, if you're an Australian bowler, Hazelwood, Stark, I'd be pretty keen or excited to get my teeth into that, you know, and get into the likes of Roy, Bairstow, Butler, and these kind of more stroke-playing players. I think my worry is that we lack a little bit of grit at the top of the order. Rory Burns has got that grit. That's fair. But outside of that, you know, Joe Denley's a sort of stroke player. Jason Roy's clearly a stroke player. Joe Root's a stroke player. And England has sort of packed their middle order with stroke players. So, you know, I do fall on the side of being a little bit more traditional and having some guys that can really bed down in that time and, you know, have a sort of technical prowess that can hopefully get us through difficult times and bat for a day. But, you know, modern-day players don't do that. So I think it is a worry at the top of the innings. There's no doubt about it. But you look at Australia, you know, I'm not looking at their batting lineup and quaking with fear either. You know, I mean, of course, they've got Warner and they've got Smith. But outside of that, I mean, Marcus Harris is a young player. You know, Bancroft, I mean, you know, he's okay. I don't think he's anything special. He's played a bit of county cricket. You know, the rest of the order, Matthew Wade playing as a batter. I mean, you know, he was a keeper batter at one stage. Now he's potentially coming in as a batter. So, you know, I don't think Australia's batting lineup is particularly worrying. Tim Payne, for me, is average at best, you know, and has done well to get that Australian captaincy. However, if you look at their bowling attack, it's very proficient. I mean, Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins, Lyon, I would say as a test bowling attack, they are slightly better than England, but I think England's batting's better. So I think it's going to be a fantastic series. A lot for me hinges on that top three, the England top three. Can they give England the start that they need? I think that'll determine the Ashes.
Great stuff, Nick. Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys.
That's Nick Compton there, ex-England opener, giving us the latest on that. And I believe Kieran has a point he would like to add to this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely, Rich. You know, Nick just said it will be a fantastic series. So I don't think it will be. I think we shouldn't be playing this Ashes series at all this summer because we've just had 7 strenuous weeks in the World Cup and we've given them basically a week and a half off and that's it. You know, and they're having to, you know, apply themselves in a totally different way. Mm. Mentally, they're shot. So I think you can see that from Johnny Bairstow's dismissal yesterday. Mm. And we're going to lose all the momentum that we could have gained from the World Cup. If we, what kids should be doing now is going down to their local county, watching the Vitality Blast, which is a fantastic competition, which we've decided to change next year for some unknown reason. At least it's on free-to-air, I suppose. But, you know, they should be watching white ball cricket because they've fallen in love with white ball cricket, hopefully, because of that amazing final. We shouldn't be playing this Ashes series when Australia as well, who got all the way to the semi-final, so they play 10 games. You know, they're both teams are not looking good enough to play Test cricket at the moment, and I just don't see why we're playing this Ashes series right off the back of a World Cup.
It's a really interesting point, actually, that you know, as you said, what a way to completely nullify the fact that we have just won the one-day international cricket World Cup if we go out and get spanked on home soil by the Aussies because basically we're knackered. And I think, like, the meticulous nature of our World Cup preparation and all the sports science that went behind it and all the effort that went in, you know, that takes it out. You know, I don't think people quite get how focused and how intense you have got to be. You've got to write off quite a significant chunk of your life if you want to go and win a Cricket World Cup. You can't just instantly all of a sudden go, right, OK, well, that's it, we're up for the Ashes again now. No, it doesn't work like that. You need more than a week and a half off.
Yeah, you make a very good point. We're going to move on to Papers from Paris very shortly. Before we do, as I say, we always ask you for your WhatsApps. We do appreciate your WhatsApps that do come in. Of course, it's 0208 70 20 558. I just want to read out a couple very quickly.
Okay, mate.
One in regards to a comment you made about people saying that they might be able to take a day off. This was from Andy. Thank you very much, Andy. About being able to take a day off because of the heat. Put here, tell Patrick, temperatures in the indoor workplace are covered by the Workplace Health, Safety and Welfare Regulations 1992, which place a legal obligation on employers to provide a reasonable temperature in the workplace. What do you say to that, Patrick?
I didn't realise that he'd get 3G at the rural train station he's inevitably at as he desperately tries to take pictures of the steam engine rolling through Carlisle.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Oh, Paris.
Paris in the late morning.
Mm.
The smell changes in Paris, I find.
Yeah, well, once all the French people have retreated, then it goes away.
Ah, fantastic. We are joined by Paris McAuliffe to go through the back pages.
Oh, well, I'm going to switch up on you. I'm going to do the front pages.
No!
Ooh.
Well, as you were talking, Boris, and how, you know, he's only 2 days in and he couldn't possibly have messed it up at this point. He had.
Oh.
He mentioned that he'd spoke what he'd said to the Queen or what the Queen had said to him.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not supposed to happen.
It's not. But, I mean, look, we can give him one. I mean,
he got so excited he met the Queen.
Yeah.
I suppose, you know, like you meet a celebrity and you're like, oh, they told me this.
And you go and tell
everyone.
Looks
really different than she does in the stamps.
Yeah.
He's allowed one a day, Boris.
One a day.
We give him one a day. That's probably about right. I mean, there's going to be days where there's three or four. So,
yeah,
you know, one mistake a day is
well,
what
does
it
that
is,
mean
really.
He has, like, if he has, like, a day, like, say he has 5 days where he's not made a mistake, next week he's allowed three on the Monday.
Well, look, we do a similar thing with Patrick here, which in fairness, and what you tend to do, I'll tell you what it's like. It's like where they say about alcohol consumption, you're allowed a couple of units a day, and some people just save them all up for one day. That's what Patrick does. We allow one a day, and what we'll tend to do is save them all up for a Friday, and then just lose our heads on a Friday. I feel like it's the same with Boris. Let's give him one a day, and so far, he is in a good place.
Defamation Friday, we call it.
Yeah, instead of dressed down. Yeah, I mean, he basically mentioned that the Queen had told him he was surprised anybody wanted the job of Prime Minister.
Mm.
Which, I mean, it's a fair analysis, isn't it?
Well, I'm actually on the road to becoming World King, Lizzie. So that.
That was the exact response. My interesting point in the Mail is that there's a picture of the two of them shaking hands, and like, of all the things in the picture to kind of like point out, do you know what the Mail have pointed out?
Go on.
She has a Dyson fan.
Nice.
Yeah, just sitting in the corner, because of course it was really hot yesterday, and
yeah.
I'm presuming, you know, Buckingham Palace heat trap. And the Dyson fan there, and like an interesting point is, like, I saw a couple of comments about this. Oh, Dyson fan, she must be for Brexit then. As Dyson is.
Oh, for goodness
and you're
sake.
Like, no.
British fan.
And you're like, are you serious?
Do you think they've got air conditioning at Buckingham Palace?
No, they're fans.
No, they just have like a load of people who just waft palm leaves at you. You know, like in the old days, and by that I mean ancient Egypt.
Yes, of course. They must have air conditioning there, surely. Sorry, I know this
maybe,
is going on.
Maybe in some of the rooms.
Could you imagine if you were hired to install air conditioning at Buckingham Palace? That'd be a really cool job.
Well,
lots
you know,
of rooms.
The sun used to get people to apply for jobs at Buckingham Palace, and they'd get the job, and then they'd have an inside source at the palace.
Really?
Yeah, the Sun used to do that. Yeah. The Sun had people working as, you know, whatever, footman or whatever kind of soul-destroying job that you have to do waiting on people like Prince Harry. Yeah, they got them in there, and they were getting all these scoops.
Well, I did not know that. You learn something every day.
Well, yeah, you do. Something else that happened yesterday with Boris Johnson, he basically, you know, was asked to form a government. He went, right, I'll do that. Goes through the doors of number 10, gets rid of 17 members of that government,
yeah.
And then replaces them. Like, quickly, just like, bang, you're out, you're
Which
in.
I like.
It's good. How
like.
How weak was Theresa May? She was like a very milky cup of tea, right? Whereas now...
Someone that's put the milk in first.
Oh, gosh. In fact, it's just milk, actually. Anyway, enough about Theresa May. But, you know, she...
Was there even a tea bag in there? That was the question.
So, basically, with Theresa May, she obviously was... you know, very, very, very weak, wasn't she? She was. She couldn't really make a decision. And whereas with Boris now, you've got someone here who's just come on through and just gone bosh, bosh, bosh. We're doing this. We're doing this. We're doing this. He's all action and energy. It's decisiveness, and that's what's been lacking. We've been rudderless.
Yeah, there is a sense of decisiveness, right? And at some points, you do go, oh, great, it's someone that's made up their mind, right? Which is, like, if you've ever been involved in a group chat and you're trying to plan things, the indecisiveness in it is not great. You need somebody to make a decision. Mm. However, sometimes what you might get with Boris is that he makes a decision which isn't great, isn't the best idea. Like, for instance, telling everyone what the Queen said, yeah. Right? And he'll just go with it. It's like someone...
Is this an issue with his filter? We're not talking dice figure, we're talking like his filter in his mind. Like, you know, some people have that where they speak before they think, and he does seem to have, you know, Patrick's looking at me and waving right now. There does seem to be an element of that where there's sometimes not a great deal of thought goes into what he says. Look, he's decisive, he takes action.
I think, to a degree, I'm not sure that's the case. I think he's very, very thoughtful, yeah. And I think everything is quite calculated. He's quite a calculating... person, I think. He knows what he's meant to be saying and how he's supposed to be coming across. Mm. I do think maybe he just got a bit excited yesterday, genuinely.
You're fired! I'm on a roll!
Well, that's it. Power hungry.
There was a headline, Night of the Long Blondes, which is...
No! Night of the Blonde Knives!
That's the one, sorry. That's the
Night
one.
Of the Long Blondes!
I got confused with that.
That's a completely different night.
Sorry.
The long blonde.
Sorry.
That's tonight.
I got the. In my head, I was thinking of the actual historical event, which was the Night of the Long Knives, which was to do with the Nazi Party, which is quite an interesting comparison to make with a Conservative government in his first day in office. Mm. You know, a bit drastic, but at the same time, he has got rid of all these people. Fired. Is what I should specify there. He's not got rid of that.
He did it so quickly, though, right? So he must have... Would he have done it all face-to-face? Would it have been a case of, like, each one coming in almost one by one, like, production line, right? You're off. You know, that it just seemed within the space of a few hours, 17 have gone.
Yeah, normally what happens there is... Well, the thing is, though, it's to be expected. Whenever you get a new prime minister, they change the cabinet around. So, like, you know, I think pretty much everyone who was a current cabinet minister would have been thinking, right, OK, I'm probably no longer going to be in post. So what normally happens is they get a message or they get a phone call to their office that just says, look, you know, can you come down and meet Boris? And then they'll rock up and it's just whatever he says to you. I mean, quite often they will offer you something. And if you're not prepared to accept that, then that's it. So Jeremy Hunt, for example, he was offered defence secretary. So we're hearing. Didn't want it. Wanted to carry on as foreign secretary. And Boris went, all right, then, see you in a bit.
There you go. Paris, thank you very much. Paris, I'd like you to stay. We're going to do our winners and losers. I think it'd be nice to have Paris involved today, if that's okay with you, Patrick.
Absolutely fine by me.
Fantastic. We've got our list of winners and losers in front of us, our regular feature, going through the day's news as to who are our winners and losers. Paris, do you want to kick us off with a winner?
A winner. Anyone appointed to Boris Johnson's cabinet yesterday, Rabah McVeigh back in, Gove in charge of preparing for a no-deal Brexit.
Definitely a winner. A loser, I'm going to go goalkeeping, and I feel a bit sorry for him, but Simon Mignolet made an error in a pre-season friendly, not a huge deal really, but of course his reputation isn't brilliant at the moment, a little bit of uncertainty over his future, so not a particularly good day for Mr. Simon Mignolet.
Winner, the weather. It's fantastic. Here in London, it's just a procession of Hawaiian shirts and shorts and people slowly going red. It's the hottest day in English history.
Loser, the weather. Yeah. Climate change is very much in full flow. By 2050, who knows where we'll be?
Paris. Yeah, basically anyone who doesn't like the heat, you're a loser today. It's just stay indoors. Don't go out. It's hot and scary outside.
That is the advice. That's something that Paris does on a day-to-day. It's very scary outside. A winner, Tim Murtagh, friend of the show. What a man. A mighty good man. Why am I reading this out?
Rich will read anything.
What a man, a mighty good man. A fifer. 13 off 9 overs. Of course, he was on the show the other day. Friend of the show. Did brilliantly yesterday for Ireland.
I've just seen some breaking news, apparently, that Palace have signed Jordan Ayew from Swansea.
Oh, okay.
That's an interesting appointment. Sorry, that just flashed up. We'll carry on with winners and losers. Winner, Spurs fans, potentially, because Dybala could be on his way from Juventus, £80 million.
Okay. Paris?
Loser for you, Dillian White reportedly failed a drugs test before his fight versus Oscar Rivas. Could derail his campaign to become world champion. I mean, if he, the B test goes in and it's testing positive again, that's it. That, he's surely
is that
not
career over, do you think?
Well, it's his second.
Yeah.
It'll be his second doping ban, and I think no one's going to touch him for the big fights.
No, indeed. Loser, we haven't said English batsmen, have we? But
not
the
yet.
English batsmen yesterday were pretty awful. A little bit of a hangover from the World Cup still, you would think. Although they do have a chance today to put things right. They certainly need to post. You would think, what, 350 plus to give themselves a chance? Maybe even 400?
Yeah, probably about that, really. Probably about that. But, I mean, I wouldn't expect Ireland to muster up too much more than 250, I would have thought.
Okay, do you want to give us another winner and loser?
Winner, Lee Griffiths.
Because he made his cut. In fact, I wanted to talk about Lee Griffiths, which I've tried to about seven times during today's show, and each time I've been shot down, unfortunately. But he did. He took time out to help him cope with some depression. He's been out for about 6 months, scored in Celtic's Champions League qualifying game yesterday. A comfortable win, 5-0. Nice to see.
Well.
Good goal. Good player. Nice to see that he's back. And it is an interesting point, actually, that, you know, we talk about injuries for players a lot and players having time out, but very rarely do we see this. But it's quite nice that he's taken time out. Hopefully now he is in a much better place mentally and can really hit the season hard, and it's good timing coming back pre-season. Hopefully it'll be a big season for Lee Griffiths.
Another winner for you, Dyson. The Queen is using your stuff.
Get
on the phone and say, by royal appointment, Dyson fans, that's their next advert. Fantastic. just lots of corgis sitting with Dyson fans.
I've got another winner for you. Australian bowlers.
Yeah.
And Australia, who are beating Australia, but of course Australia losing to Australia currently. A lot of issues there. But no, Australian bowlers, the batsmen aren't doing particularly well. They are, of course, playing against each other. I believe they were bowled out for 120 and 105. Yeah. So not a particularly good day for the batsmen, including Smith, who single figures both times, I believe, was bowled out for.
There we go. Right, well, that's it for the winners and losers.
Is there no more?
No.
You forgot about Jeremy Hunt.
Jeremy Hunt. I left that one for you.
Oh, Jeremy Hunt, yes.
Left out of the cabinet after trying to call Boris's bluff.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I'm actually just going to add an unashamed winner here.
Go on.
Boris Johnson, right? By definition, is a winner. He's won. He's got the keys to 10 Downing Street now, even though he's going to be living in 11 Downing Street with his much younger girlfriend. I think he is. I know that he's, you know, a bit of a buffoon. In fact, he's so much of a buffoon that Stormzy has two separate songs in which he says, Boris, right? In fact, so did about 100,000 people at Glastonbury. They all shouted it. However, right, we have had an absolute disaster in this country for the last 3 years. And I wouldn't mind, but the leader of our opposition is absolutely pants. Right, look at the state of him. I mean, for goodness sake, or really, seriously, that was one way to absolutely ensure that Britain never makes anything of itself again would be, some would argue, to elect Jeremy Corbyn. And Boris Johnson's come in, he's decisive, he's clear-cut, and actually, you know what? So far, he's given the kind of vigour and positivity that we've been lacking.
I'm almost expecting the national anthem just to start playing underneath that.
The national anthem, of course, which will be scrapped under Jeremy Corbyn. No, that's not true.
He may have been handed the keys.
True.
He has misplaced them three times already, reports have said. once they were just already still in his pocket. But, Boris Johnson is definitely a winner.
He's now looking for his glasses, which are on his head.
Oh, we're going to have some fun with Boris, aren't we?
This is Love Sport. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.